From the KTOA newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Several big new oil discoveries have been announced in Alaska over the past few years, and a lot of attention is focused on the next wave of North Slope oil exploration, especially when it comes to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But this winter, a massive exploration effort is aimed at finding new oil in a field that was discovered decades ago, Prudhoe Bay. Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk explains why.
Last year, I paid a visit to Prudhoe Bay, and one of the stops was Pump Station 1.
This is the oil from Prudhoe coming in, and then it goes down the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, so 800-some miles to Valdez from here.
My tour guide was Scott Deigert with BP, the company that operates Prudhoe Bay. Prudhoe Bay is the biggest oil field ever discovered in Alaska, and it's been in production for over 40 years now, a decade longer than expected. Deigert explains that if you could peek inside the machinery that collects everything pumped up from Prudhoe Bay, less than 1% of what's in there is oil. There's a little bit of water, and the other 97% is natural gas.
So while we're still a very big oil field, we're a huge gas field and a big water field.
Alaska doesn't have a second pipeline to get all that gas to market, so most of it is just pumped back into Prudhoe Bay to help squeeze more oil out. Deigert says there's still plenty of oil in Prudhoe Bay, but now they have to work a lot harder to get it, using increasingly advanced technology. This winter, BP is getting ready to use some of that technology. The oil company is undertaking a massive effort to get the clearest picture yet of what the Prudhoe Bay oil field looks like. The idea is, after all these years, there's more oil at Prudhoe to find and drill, but it's in smaller, harder-to-find pockets.
We have thousands of wells that have gone through this area, but now we're down to smaller and smaller oil pools that we're trying to target.
That's Deigert again. We met this month at BP Alaska's headquarters in Anchorage. Deigert explains that this winter, BP is going to go over 470 square miles with a fine-tooth comb.
This is an unusually large survey for us.
To do it, BP is using what's called 3D seismic technology. BP geophysicist Gino Alexander says, simply put, 3D seismic means using sound waves to figure out what it looks like beneath the ground.
What we do is we create a seismic source and a sound wave, and it reflects in the subsurface, and we record it.
That seismic source is a huge vehicle that rolls over the snow-covered tundra and vibrates the ground. Alexander says a recording device, kind of like my microphone, measures the signal that comes back.
We then take that recorded signal, and we use physics and mathematics to turn that into an image in very much the same way that you would turn a picture from your digital camera when it records ones and zeros into an image. We do that in a very similar way.
The picture will give BP the best, most detailed data yet on what's going on in the layers of rock beneath the tundra and where to find the remaining oil. Efforts like this have paid off for the company. After years of decline, BP has managed to flatten production at Prudhoe Bay. Its new mantra is 40 more. Deigert says that while other companies like ConocoPhillips and Hilcorp are working to bring new oil fields online, BP still thinks it's important to keep Prudhoe Bay going.
There's a lot of space in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline right now, so there's lots of room to get more oil off the slope, but we do have to have that kind of critical volume of oil going down the pipeline.
Deigert says this winter's 3D seismic program will guide the next decade of drilling, helping BP squeeze every last drop out of Alaska's biggest oil field. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
A former Alaska elections director is returning to that role. Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer announced he's appointed Gail Fanumiai as director of the Division of Elections. She's set to start January 2nd. Fanumiai held the job from 2008 to 2015. She was replaced by Josie Banky. Meyer Chief of Staff Josh Appleby says Banky's last day was Friday. Appleby says the change in leadership is not expected to be a problem in ongoing litigation over a Fairbanks House seat. Democrat Catherine Dodge challenged results of a recount that showed her losing to Republican Bart Laban by one vote. Both candidates have questioned decisions made on whether to count or exclude some ballots. Lori Wilson, a regional election supervisor, will be interim director until Fanumiai takes over. The U.S. Forest Service's district ranger in Petersburg has moved on to a job with the agency's regional office here in Juneau. The Forest Service spokesman confirms Dave Zimmerman has accepted a job as the Forest Products Group Leader with the regional office. Ted Sandoffer, a Timber Sale Administration Program Manager and Contracting Officer, is serving as acting district ranger while the agency looks for a permanent replacement. Zimmerman has been district ranger in Petersburg since 2016. He started with the Forest Service in 1969 and worked with that agency into the mid-1980s, including stints on the Tongass based in Sitka and Juneau. Before coming to Petersburg, Zimmerman worked for about 6 years with the Forest Service in Oregon. The district ranger leads a staff managing the 1.6 million acres of Tongass National Forest land on Mitkoff, Kuprinoff, Kuyu, and smaller islands in central southeast. Just about a month after halibut and black cod fishing came to a close, fishermen are taking stock of their seasons. Some longliners using a new piece of gear, known as longline pots, to prevent whales from stealing their catch are returning happier than others. KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports.
Yeah, right there's one right underneath you, killer whale.
Oh, you dirty.
Bill Harrington is not happy. A pod of killer whales is swarming his boat as he returns to pull in his line. The sound is a dinner bell for both the pod and a large sperm whale that surfaces about 20 feet from his boat.
Whoa, mother!
This video was shot 10 years ago when Harrington longlined in the eastern Gulf of Alaska. Harrington and his crew would travel 100 miles or more and bait thousands of hooks attached to a commercial fishing line by hand, before anchoring it to the ocean floor between two buoys. A sperm whale or just a couple of killer whales can pick a line clean as it's pulled in.
As far as I'm concerned, they're only thieves in tuxedos.
Harrington retired a few years back, and he says the problem only got worse. However, federal fishery managers say the number of black cod whales are eating off long lines has been decreasing over the past decade. Currently, the National Marine Fisheries Service estimates that whales eat about $3.1 million worth of black cod statewide per season, just a fraction of the overall catch. The International Pacific Halibut Commission doesn't currently estimate those numbers for halibut, but fishermen say they're losing thousands of dollars per trip. Roy Wilson lives in Cordova and delivered his last halibut load of the season to the docks in Homer in early November. His crew is washing off the deck after a trip to the Aleutian Islands, a trip Wilson ended early because of killer whales.
We just left a lot of fish on the grounds, probably $50,000 worth of fish on the grounds that we won't ever see again, but at least the fish are alive.
Despite smaller paychecks for both him and his crew, Wilson is happy killer whales didn't steal more of his catch. A potential solution to this problem is coming from new regulations. In the coming years, longline fishermen in western Alaska will be allowed to catch halibut in longline pots, something black cod fishermen in the region have done for years, and those in the Gulf of Alaska began in 2017. Instead of fish being exposed on hooks along the ocean floor, fish swim into enclosed containers, seeking the bait inside. The pots protect the catch from sperm and killer whales looking for an easy meal. Wilson also fishes for black cod and made the switch to pots.
If everybody could go to pots, it would be a great thing for the fishery.
However, only 12% of black cod pulled from the water by longliners this season were caught in pots. And there are reasons some fishermen are reluctant to make the switch. Pots take up more space on the fishing grounds and they can get tangled with traditional longline gear. That's why the North Pacific Fishery Management Council prohibited pots in the 80s and 90s. But now that regulators have reapproved the gear, there's another barrier.
The gear is just so expensive.
Homer longliner Eric Velsko is thinking about spending $200,000 just to get started. Like Wilson, Velsko also views the switch as a conservation measure, as he fears black cod managers are underestimating just how many fish whales are eating.
You know, I think if we just keep doing what we're doing, it's just going to get worse and worse and harder every year.
Velsko may stop black cod fishing altogether and focus on other fisheries if he can't afford the switch to pots. Back on the deck of Wilson's boat, his 28-year-old daughter Marissa Wilson is cleaning fish. She worked for her dad full-time up until last year when she took a desk job in conservation.
This is the first year that I haven't gone out fishing, and it's been... I've had to do a lot of soul searching.
She's been thinking about buying her own boat, but deciding what fishery she might invest in first is a big financial decision.
I don't think I'll ever stop feeling like a fisherman. I'm taking a little hiatus, but I've always got my eyes on the ocean.
Wilson says she's leaning towards fishing for black cod in the Bering Sea. And if she invests in pots, she won't have to worry about those thieves in tuxedos. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
That's the latest from the KTO Newsroom in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea.